Yeah, they asked me to stay. They said, well, go to the farm and do your seeding and then come back here. Foreman said, I said, no, I won't. I didn't feel too comfortable there.
Did you do any highway construction?
Did I ever work on highway construction? I was telling you about the road that they built off the Foreman Bridge up to the hill there.
Yeah.
That's the only, you can't call it a highway,
yeah.
But that's the only road construction I ever was in there, and that was only one summer. No. But I learned how to swing an axe. The old Leogodis, he was, he only had one eye, but he sure could swing an axe. Yeah, he taught me a lot about how to handle an axe and how to keep it sharp and how to save the handle. And, yeah, that was the time that Laurie Willen, you know Laurie Willen, he was not the foreman, old Leo Spoller was the foreman, but Laurie Willen was the foreman for that particular job. Laurie, he lives here right there,
down there,
right where they're building the new pizza parlor, the next place.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. He was the foreman. Yeah. He was my foreman all that summer on the job.
Do you have any stories that you might have remembered when you worked
for
down here?
I have lots of stories.
Well, yeah, we try to remember, so I know you do.
Bring your first calf in the world. I never see it. Never see a cow.
That was, that had nothing to do with the history of Hayden or anything. That used to be, we had milk cows and we were short of hay field. You know, the few fields we had, we needed all that grass for hay. So you had to turn the cows, there was open range country at the cows, so we had to turn these cows on the road in the morning after they were milking. So and then we went to town, and where are these cows when you come back at 5 o'clock when you want them to have them in the barn again? You never know. They'd be all over the place. They'd be right up close to Bell Lake there, or they'd be 5-6 miles up to Kidwinger.
Pick them up in Clem Wall.
Or they'd be right, the youngster, yeah, but the milk cows used to go right up to where the ferry was, and even further see the creek come. And so it was always quite a fight there every night to get these cows home. It was one night we never got them home. Found them the next morning. They never came home.
Yeah, you must know
Bovary. Georgie Holland,
Forsyth, Stuart Forsyth.
Yeah, he's a neighbor, but he lives on the same road. Oh yeah, but he didn't live there when we came. No, he came later.
Chris Hindle was living there. Chris Hindle.
Yeah, you remember Bernard Hindle, who used to be the postmaster in Old Town? Bernard and Sally Hindle? Oh, you must remember them. Sally Hindle still lives in Old Town there. Bernard Hindle. Well, his dad, Chris Hindle, he lived there on that place where Stuart Forsyth lived. And he sold it to another guy, and then this guy sold it to another guy, outfit. And it wasn't until about 19, when did that Lamarcky move in there? Or move out of there, 1960. Well, Anya was, Anya was, six. Anya was in 4 years.
I never know when Lamarcky moved out.
She was in grade five, so she was 11. Yeah, it must have been around, Stuart Forsyth didn't come there until around 1961 or 62. Arthur Henkin, you remember? No, you don't remember him. Arthur Henkin, he was a prospector. No, you don't remember him. He lived there. You know Bovalier, or you heard of Bovalier?
I guess. Okay.
Yeah, you heard of them, eh? Yeah. Well, they lived there, right across from Old Town, but way on the back road. But then way off, they don't live right on the road. Their field, you have to go a long driving. Okay, but then in that same little country, there was Arthur Henkin. He was a bachelor. Big tall guy. He was the first white man born in the Hiddleston Hospital, in the Ridge Memorial Hospital, seems to me somebody told me. Wasn't he? Yeah.
Right.
Old guy, a tall guy, was 6'2" or 6'3", a prospector. And it's too bad he's dead because he could get all these stories. He died years ago, he died about 12 years ago.
You know, McDonald's were living Sterrett's place. Okay.
Then there was Mike Linko. Neil Sterrett's place. Now, in between where Arthur Henkin lives or Bovary lives now, and where Neil Sterrett lives now, was nothing. There was no farms there whatsoever. And old Mike Linko, he was still alive when we came. He was married to a black woman, a Negro woman.
Yeah.
Yeah, but she had died already. He was an old Russian. He came from Russia.
Yeah.
And he fired her. He died that same winter. We bought the place in the fall, and that same winter, around Christmas time, he died. But we remember him. Yeah. Little tiny gray-haired guy. Yeah. I must have done a lot of. They say he cleared that whole Neil Stark place. He cleared it all with a team of horses and a stump over in an action.
Is that right?
Yeah, and there's quite a few acres there. It's a big field. I don't know how big it is. But the old Hazelden Hospital was, of course, was there, and so were the nurses' home.
Mm-hmm.
Right behind on the premises of the hospital was the power station. Mm-hmm. Somebody must have told you that. The BC Hydro was there. It was just a diesel plant, you know, that made electricity.
Were any of your children born here?
No, they were all born in Holland. Who was the doctor there? Dr. Reinen was one of them. Dr. Rinch wasn't there anymore.
No.
I've never known Dr. Rinch.
Dr. Lasichek, Dr.
No, he came later. He wasn't there every weekend. Reinen and Dr. Whiting wasn't there either. I don't know. We just didn't have time to get sick. Of course, we were young, you know, so you're usually in pretty good health.
Yeah.
And I can't remember. I know when I worked for the public works in the summer of 1953, Lasichek was here because I busted my finger and Lasichek was the one that sewed it up. Yeah, that was why I was working for the public works. So he must have, but I don't think he was here when we came.
No,
he must have come right after that. We came in 1952, and in the summer of 1953, I busted my finger.
No, she ran right after us.
Yeah, probably after. But anyway, and Russell was the administrator. That's a man by the name of Russell, wasn't it? Yeah, we used to go out for dinner at one time. They asked us for dinner with Russell. And then later on, it was that bachelor that lived there by Strasser in Cuba.
What
was his name? No, I don't remember that name.
Don't matter.
But there was no dentist. And there was no specialist of any kind. If you had need surgery, you had to go to Terrace. Or I don't think even Smithers had a surgeon. Terrace had a surgeon. All they did was they didn't have a dentist. I know for sure because I had trouble with my teeth at the time. And Doctor Whiting.
Well, last chick and his wife are alive.
Yeah, and Doctor Whiting used to pull them out. He was good in pulling teeth.
Yeah, I remember that.
Yeah. Yeah,
Dr.
Palmer was another doctor. He was there in the early days, late 50s, I guess it was. Dr. Palmer, he was a good, nice man, and he was a good doctor too, but he wasn't a very good tooth puller. He was always afraid he would hurt you. Does it hurt, Bill? No, it doesn't hurt. Oh, I'll probably hurt. When it hurts you, let me know. Dr. Whiting just shoved the needle in it, you know, and let you sit for 10 minutes, and he came back and said, open your mouth. Yeah, Dr. Whiting, he was a tough one, that boy.
Yeah.
I was a little scared of him. But I don't remember too much at all. So I was in the hospital with my back. I had hurt my back one time, and I forget now. I don't remember much about it. They have a good medical setup here now. They have doctors, they have a man that can put you to sleep, they have a man that can comes and can do surgery. They have an eye doctor, they have two dentists, they have, I don't know, five, six, seven doctors. So right now they have, no, I want to stress that point because it's very important for the community that the medical health is really good. They have excellent health nurses. It's a very good setup here now. No problem.
Well, do you remember any more stories? I can come by and, you know.
If I can think of anything, yeah. Give me your phone number and I'll mark that down here.
It's the same thing as tribal council number, but I'm the local 211.
You're left-handed, eh?
When you first came to Canada, 1951?
In the spring of 1951, and we moved into Quick. Yeah, I got off the train in Talca on the station and went to work on that dairy farm, milk cows. And spent a year there. And then I got a job in the forest. No, I worked in the sawmill in Smithers for a few weeks. And then I got a job with the Forest Service at Lake Elf Lake in Terrace, you know, Lake Elf Lake. Mm-hmm. Yeah, right. And we worked there also. I would have liked to join the Forest Service, but I wasn't a Canadian citizen yet. You know, you have to be in this country for 5 years, those days, for 5 years before you could apply for citizenship. So there was no way that I could stay with the Forest Service. It was just a summer job. And that fall, we got the farm.
And that was the first time that we saw a bear. We had our food in a little creek, the milk and all the stuff, but we're gonna go to town anytime. And then anytime the bear empty all everything.
Yeah, you had no refrigeration of electricity there, so you had a little cache in the creek, you see a little box with your butter and whatever was perishable, your milk. Dumb bear used to go around all these cabins and dig them up, you know, help himself to whatever was there.
And the one sending it up, man. What was the name
little,
of the man?
Dublin.
Oh, yeah. He was met his boat coming on our place and shows the bear.
He shot the bear, finally got the bear, you know, the marauder, and showed him off to the people so we could sleep in peace. Didn't have to worry about it. Yeah.
Is that in Queen?
No, that was in
Lake Elf Lake.
Yeah, I saw a bear in Quick, too. One morning I came down, I had to be in the barn at 5 o'clock in the morning. Mm-hmm. So to get the milking started, they had a big fire, they milked about 40 cows. I was coming down in the winter, it was pitch dark, and I had a lantern, a kerosene lantern in my carry to see my way. You know. Came down that hill, and then you had to cross through a long field, and then came to where the barns were. And I came down and I said, "Now, what's that dark thing there down below the foot of the hill?" He was a bull moose. He was standing right in the middle of that trail, and he didn't want to move. Snow was piled up, it's quite snow country. Mm-hmm. Snow was piled up. I had to be in the barn anyway, but you know, the minute if I wasn't there, they couldn't start milking. I had to start the thing up. So, well, I stood there. I was just wondering whether I should turn home, or I couldn't phone, of course, we had no phone or nothing. So finally, after maybe all of 5 minutes, it looked like eternity almost, and finally the bull started to move, and he jumped across the snowbank and left off in the bush. But I'd never seen a moose in my life before, so I sort of had an uneasy feeling. He was a big brute, I'll tell you. And in the dark, of course, they looked twice as big as in daylight. So.
And when we moved in that house,
nothing
the
happened.
People was telling us, in the winter, the moose come on the house and rubbed itself. And we don't believe it. And then one morning we woke up and the whole house was shaking.
Yeah, and
a big moose.
Was
a big moose.
Yeah, behind on the back of the house, there was a little woodshed just a few feet away from the house and in between there. And we found that the house was sort of moving, you know. So I woke up and I was in the middle of the night and saw a moonlight. It must have been a little light because I could see something. Here was a bull moose or a moose, I don't know, it was a bull or a cow, rubbing his flanks on the house. Sort of funny. Real moose country there. Yeah, moose and grouse.
The first time that we hear the bulls howling, I had to feel my hair was going up.
Yeah, well, right by the country there, there again, that's the, that house is still there, at least it was a few years ago. We had a week back there, the barn burned up. We had a few chickens there, we bought a few pullets, and we had our own eggs.
Is that you guys? Is that your farm?
No.
No, no, no,
that
was
in
Crick.
Oh,
that was in Crick where we started. That's where the first house we lived in Canada. Yeah. Yeah, it wasn't much of a house, but anyway, we were.
The first Sunday
we had a job
that, he had, that he was off, he had to work there 13 days and a one Sunday off. And then we took him, it was in the winter, man.
Yeah.
We took up, we were going in the hill. And then he said, now look, there's some dogs midden in the bush and it were wolves. And we were thinking that were the dogs.
Yeah, it wasn't an easy year, but I learned a lot. I did enjoy it. They were nice, they were good, they were hard workers, but they were good people to work for, no problem. They're all dead, except those four brothers that are on that farm. They're all dead except for one. Yeah, time goes on. And then we did a few hundred dollars we saved up over those year and a half. We stuck into the farm and kept on paying for it over a number of years. And finally it was ours.
Yeah. In between, we were first at Lackout's Lake.
Hmm?
Before that you bought the farm, we were on Lackout's Lake.
Yeah. It was a patrolman for the Forest Service.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I had to all clear trails and go up the lookout. And it was an easy summer. It was a lot easier than working on the dairy farm, I'll tell you.
That's nice, you had a boat. You
well,
could go on the lake with
the
boat.
You had to get up at 5 o'clock in the morning, and you know, you were sort of, well, you had to do work, but you were still on your own. That wasn't too bad. Yeah.
Whereabouts did you first touch?
In Quebec.
Quebec. In Quebec City or Montreal?
Quebec City.
Oh, yeah.
We had a really rough boat.
Yeah, it was a bad boat trip. We ran into a storm right in the middle of the Atlantic. It wasn't very funny.
We had to come in Halifax.
But
and
yeah,
the boat couldn't make it.
Somehow or another, we didn't make it to Halifax, so they shipped it off to Quebec. That way, it didn't make any difference. And then we had to train right, of course.
Train right out of BC.
Yeah, to right to Telfer, yeah. Yeah, long, no, it took about, well, we had a weekend stopover in Winnipeg.
It took 4 days, you trained it.
A little bit more than that.
Yeah, 2 days you stayed on the train,
yeah.
4 days.
But we enjoyed that, you know, it was new, and, you know, you were full of anticipation, you could say, you know, if we're wondering what Canada would mean to us and what it would bring.
And in Holland, you told you that in the books, there was lots of oaks, and we never saw an oak tree.
Mm-hmm.
And we went anytime wandering, all the houses had a screen on the windows.
In Europe, you don't see wooden houses, very little, at least not in Western Europe. Here was all here, you don't see any brick houses. You know, they're all brick houses. Here it's all wooden houses, sort of thing. And then we were quite amazed by people lived in well, what we call poor housing. You know, you don't see it anymore. Housing has improved a lot here. But what I struck from the train was the poor housing and the big, beautiful cars that were sitting in front of them.
Yeah.
People had, just like if they lived in the car instead of in a house, because the car was so good and the house was so poor. That has changed a lot. Your housing has, you take right here in Hazleton, you take the reserve, for instance, and how much that has improved over here. When we came up on the bench there, God, how many houses were there? You know, Riley Robinson,
mm-hmm.
His dad and mom, what was his first name? Her name was Louise, I think. What was his name? No. He worked for the public works. He lived up on the hill there. And then there was Howard Way, and there was Joe Smith, and there was Charlie Smith, and there was, he's still alive, our good friend Arthur Mowat, Ben Woods. I used to live in Milton, a lot of these places, and there was Rebecca Morrison, there was not James Morrison, but Sam Morrison, he's dead for you, he'd been dead for you. And Austin Matthews lived on the hill. And there was a few more, that I can't remember now. And that was on. And now you go there. You go there on the hill, and then you go to where the, by the, by the, and then you go around the ballpark, and across from the ballpark, and then you go where the, now by the birch trees there, where the house, between the forest and the house. And you couldn't believe the number of houses that are there. Yeah, well, I bet you 90% of them weren't there when we came. There were no houses here at the golf, what they call the golf course. There was hardly any house. There was no houses on the across the ballpark. There was, let's say, there was maybe, I don't know how many houses up on the hill. But,
most of them. There was one house by the ballpark, that log house.
The Patsies lived there too, on the, by the Salvation Army in that area. Yeah, there was.
How many people lived out towards where you lived? How many people lived there when you first moved out there?
Donald McIntosh, old Donald McIntosh, he was, I guess he was a widower or a bachelor, I don't know, he lived there and we lived there. Michael Eagle died, and that place was vacant for a few years. And
Mrs. Breckenen was living
Mrs.
there.
Mrs. Breckenen, yeah, she was there when we first came here. She was an Indian lady, who was married to a white man, and he died, and she lived there. But she moved out because she couldn't hack it anymore. She couldn't look after herself, so she moved to Tuma, had a little cabin in Tuma. And that place, somebody bought it, yeah, and the Bigham moved into the next year. But when we Even when Bingham moved out, I think, were there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when Bingham moved out. There was a time that we and Donald McIntosh were the only ones on the road. But
yeah, Bingham was working in the valley.
You had Neil Starrett's place. There was nothing on this side of it except for across from Hill. There was Neil Starrett's place. There was the
Donald McIntosh.
Charlie McIntosh's place. There was the going downstream from Starrett. There was the Michael Ingram's place with his stairs now. There was Charlie McIntosh's place, which belongs to Neil Starrett now. There was Donald McIntosh's place, which belongs to Peterson now. There was the Helen Breckenen place, which belongs to Peterson now. Peterson has a big farm there. Then there was the Johnny McIntosh place, which belongs to the Martins now. Martins.
How many were animals living there when we moved in?
No, Johnny McIntosh had moved to two. And then there was Mrs. Breckenen. And later on, the very next year, Bigham's moved in there. You know Norman Hagen?
Ever?
Norman Hagen, he's a law contractor in the Kitchcock. His wife was our neighbor, she was the daughter of our neighbor. And then there was our place, the old Elliott place, that's what we had. And there was no road, we were talking about that bridge that was built, and was different, that made, I was telling you the story about the beer bottle. But there was also, when we first came there, when you came to our gate, which is the last farm on that stretch from there downstream, there was no road further on. That was the end of the road.
Mm-hmm.
There was no road whatsoever.
There was more transportation to get around.
And, the people in Kitwanger couldn't get out. They lived on that side of the river.
Yeah.
Couldn't get out. All they had was in the winter time with the train. In the summertime they had the ferry, but the winter they take the ferry out because it break up, of course. So in the wintertime, the only time they could get out was a train, and there was one train every other day, three trains a week,
yeah.
One train every day. You can imagine?
Yeah.
Yeah, different, huh?
Yeah,
really. Yeah, right. Yeah, and then finally they decided, well, that was a bit, people complained, and so that was a bit much. And so then they extended the road, they kept catching there. One cat started at our gate, pushing the trees down towards Kitwanger. There was another cat from Kitwanger pushing its way. And they just hoped and prayed that they would meet each other somewhere there in the bush. Well, I guess they had a bit survey, but it was they did a pretty lousy job of laying it out. Now later on, they've straightened some of the corners out. It wasn't a very good grade. But anyway, that made quite a difference. Those first year and a half, 2 years before they started pushing that road in, if we heard a motor, the kids were all run. We all would run to the gate or run to the window, and see where somebody must have come and visited, because we were the end of the road. That was the end of the world. There was nothing there. Yeah, there wasn't even a trail there.
How did you get around? Walked around when you first got here? or did he have the vehicle?
We bought the same at the same time that we bought the farm, made a down payment on the farm. We made a down payment on an old panel truck. Bless its soul. Boy. But anyway, that's a total story all by itself.
There's a lot of swearing in Diaz. He never was swearing in Holland, but he learned it here in Canada.
Fever was in bad shape, and we were in bad financial shape. You go move to another country and you have a family and you want to start a little business, whatever it is, farm or whatever it is, it's tough, it's not easy. But that's good. I mean, it doesn't hurt a person. It was a good experience. I never regret it. Your health is your health, and if you're content with what you're happy with what you're doing, and your health is pretty good, you know, that what else does a man want in life? There was always enough to eat. Never any money, but there was always.
You sure wish that's the thing what we found?
Oh, yeah. It's an interesting piece of Indian handicraft that I picked up in my city patch one day.
Do you help around a farm while you were living out here?
You ever seen one like that before? Say, I don't know, I just go by what people told me. I thought it was sort of a thing that they maybe use for skinning out a moose or stretching a moose hide or something like that, but they say the Indians would take a limb of a tree, like say a spruce tree or anything strong, and they would cut it off and they'd take some of the tree with it. So you had a piece of the tree, bark and part of the wood, you know, and then a limb sticking out, so it made a sort of a handle. Then they would have this here that was notched out so they could put some, well, either a moose hide or whatever, wrap around so the handle and the splitting tool would be together, like, you know, would be very good use as that. And then feel that horse right there. I was holding a potato there about 4 years ago. I was holding my potato field. And I thought, no, that's funny.
To say that was an old place where the people was living.
Is there
a little town? Yeah.
Very muddy. It was a wet day, and I had to hold the potatoes because the weeds were getting taken over. No, I thought, now this is a funny thing. It was all covered with clay, and there's no rocks in that part of the field. And so I bent down and I had my hoe, you know, and I scraped it off a bit, and picked it up, and then I scraped it off a little more. And you know, so what can you do? There's lots of them there. I showed it to, who was it, Ron Burley or something, Kassan or Teddy. My son showed it to. I think it was Ron Burley, and he said, well, it's a nice thing, but he said, don't think that it's anything that's unique, because there's quite, and I've, in the meantime, since those 4 years ago, I've seen at least two of them. Who else? One in Delco with that old guy, and one, where did we see the other one? Just not too long ago, somebody showed us. It was a little bigger than this one, but it wasn't as nice and smooth as this one.
That's a
great
piece.
For
a stone and something.
Yeah. How the hell did it get there? Never know.
That's what I was saying. In the old days, people was living there. There's maybe.
Oh, definitely, yeah. It was, right by the river. Chances are not.